On Tech News Today, Google is testing a carpooling app, GoPro is launching an all-new camera, and a software company that makes hacking tools is wishing hacking tools didn't exist. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 6th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. We've got some fantastic journalists to talk to today, so why don't we jump right into the news. Google today began testing a carpooling service in Tel Aviv, Israel. The test is being conducted by Google's Waze group. Waze is a social driving and mapping app that Google acquired 2 years ago. Or Hershog is a tech reporter for The Wall Street Journal and joins us now from Tel Aviv. Welcome to you, Or.
Hi, Mike. What's interesting about this bit is how Google plans to avoid being scrutinized by regulators in Israel and probably all around the world. And they're not sketching it as your usual carpooling service. They're saying this is just for commuters, and they're going to limit the amount of rides that any driver can offer. So it would only be like he's picking up his neighbors and going to work and then coming back and not actually making a profit out of it. So they can only pay for the expenses, which is gas and wear and tear. And that's basically it. I'm not sure how this actually fits with Israeli regulation, which is quite strict and quite literal. That would be very interesting to watch how this plays out.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar. I know that one of your colleagues wrote for the Wall Street Journal about a few months ago, about an app called Ride, which is similar to this in the sense that it's instead of being a ride, sort of a quasi-pseudo taxi service like Uber, it's a carpooling service where you pick people up along your route and you get reimbursed for gas and that sort of thing. How is this different or similar to Ride? I do know, for example, that Ride is something that is being sold to the companies that would then offer it to their employees. Is this likely to be similar or is it too early to tell?
So it's a bit early to say how this specific service differentiates from all the various services. You have quite a few in Europe as well. And I just got an email from somebody saying that he has something similar in Turkey. The point is that they're offering it as a peer-to-peer service. It's all based on what users actually punch in terms of their destination, in terms of where they are located. It's not supposed to be a B2B approach. They're not approaching businesses at the time. And if I remember correctly, actually Waze had something very, very similar in terms of being able to set up a place where you're located, and then somebody that has a Waze account can come and pick you up with very, very detailed locationing. I think the only major thing that they've added in now is the ability to pay somebody. And as said, it's not actually, it's poised as an Uber competitor, but for sure, it's not an Uber competitor, at least not for now.
It's really great to see Waze doing this, monetizing it like this. I've been wondering what Google would do with Waze. Of course, Waze is a great mapping app. It's a great alternative to Google Maps if you're taking a trip, because basically the way it works is it crowdsources or uses social tools to share information about what's going on. So, for example, if there's a hazard on the side of the road or some police person is there or there's cheap gas or this, that, and the other thing, all this information is essentially crowdsourced. So as a user, you put in that information and share it with other users. And you can also see those other users, at least the ones who've chosen to be seen, on the map as you're driving around. It's a great app. Yeah. Now, go ahead, Or.
Actually, historically, Waze started out as a social service because they didn't want to pay for mapping. So they used the information coming from users to actually create the maps of the world that are all around us. Instead of, taking satellite photos and discerning what's there, they actually let the cars move around and draw the roads as they're going.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Now, in addition to this being used through Waze, It's also available through something called RideWith. What is RideWith?
So if you ask me, that RideWith is an app that they brought to the market. It's just out today. And for me, it spells that they don't want the service to be offered only to Waze users, which are usually drivers and people that have cars, but they want to offer it also to customers who don't usually use Waze. So they made like a customer side app for people who want to order rides, and that is coupled with Waze. So if I want to order a rideshare, I do it through RideWith. If I'm a driver who wants to pick up passengers, I'm doing it through my Waze.
Very interesting. Orrin Hershog is at the Wall Street Journal's website, which is WSJ.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Orr_Hersh. Thank you so much for joining us today, Orr.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Got more news for you coming right up. But first, we're going to take a break so I can tell you about Gazelle. Now, everybody's talking about Gazelle these days because they are now selling phones. But I want to talk about how great they are as a place for you to sell to them. That is their traditional role. Just go to GAZELLE.com. Do it right now and check this out. You're not going to believe how much they're going to give you for your current device. Now, there's a lot of news flying around on the internet this weekend and today about the fact that the iPhone 6S is getting ready to go into production. Now, every time there's a new phone, if you're planning to upgrade to the next iPhone, for example, you want to be strategic about it. And what I mean by that is the sooner you sell your old device to Gazelle, the more money they're going to give you for it. And as soon as a new iPhone hits, the value of phones drops somewhat significantly. So if you sell, for example, your old device to Gazelle a couple of weeks before the new iPhone hits versus a couple of weeks after the new iPhone hits, the price difference is going to be pretty significant. So you want to be strategic about it and upgrade as soon as you can, sell as soon as you can, do whatever you can to sell as soon as you can. And if your device is in great shape, you know, always put a case on it and so on, you'll get a fantastic price as well. So what you do at gazelle.com is you just go there and choose whether you've got an iPhone or an Android phone. You choose the actual device, and then you indicate its condition. Is it scratched? Is it broken? Is it flawless? What is the condition? And then once you enter that condition, they'll give you a price, and then they send you a box. You put it in the box, send it off, and they pay you. It's such a great service because it is so easy. They take a problem that lots of us have, which is that we have these old devices, and they're sitting around. They're gathering dust. The battery's dying. We're not charging it. We're not using it. It's just sitting there. You might as well get some cash and apply that cash to your next purchase. Find out what your iPhone's worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. GoPro launched a new camera called the GoPro Hero 4 Session. It's the first entirely new line for the company in years. Joining us to talk about the Session is Brent Rose, who wrote an extensive review for Wired. Welcome to you, Brent.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
Glad you're here. Now, how does the Session, let's start with the basics, how does the Session compare with other GoPro cameras?
So it's interesting. It's kind of a mid-range as far as GoPro's lineup goes. They've got the Hero line, which is sort of their very entry-level, and then they've got the Hero 4 Silver, which is their upper tier, and the Hero 4 Black, which is borderline prosumer. And this kind of fits right in the middle, but what's strange is that it's priced the same as the Silver, which outperforms it.
And it does that because I would imagine that it's smaller and lighter. Is that correct?
That's right. So it's got some really cool things going for it. Actually, it's a small 1.5-inch cube, and it's weighs only about 2.5 ounces, and it's completely waterproof up to 33 feet as is. So next to a standard GoPro in its housing, it's about 50% smaller, about 35% lighter. And that's really nice. It's kind of like a run and gun kind of affair. Where it kind of is lacking is image quality. It's a little bit behind where the Silver is. It's kind of like a GoPro of a couple years ago. So it's by no means bad, but if you're comparing it to the Silver, which comes in at the same price, it's definitely way behind it.
I would guess, given the history of GoPro, which by the way started, their very first cameras were horrible. The image quality was just awful. And then they took a specific form factor with terrible image quality, and they kept improving the internals until they had great image quality. And I imagine that's the plan here. They're going to have this little cube thing, just improve in image quality, and then you'll end up with a high-quality HD camera that's also light, small, and waterproof. Is there any advantage to the cube shape? I know that GoPro does all kinds of wacky stuff with their cameras. Like, for example, they work with Google for Google Jump to integrate it into a virtual reality housing. Is there any advantage that you know of for the cube shape as opposed to a flat rectangle?
I can actually show you right here. I've got one right with me. So basically, you've got these different frame mounts, and you can put them in any orientation you want, which is unique because normally GoPros are, you know, these sort of rectangular shapes. So you can't really mount it to the side of something without having to use these weird elbow joints.
So in other words, what you're saying is that you can turn the camera inside the housing and the housing stays mounted?
That's correct. I mean, you have to open the housing and turn it, but then it's, you know, it's as simple as that. So it really opens up a lot more mounting options. And again, the form factor is really nice. I went swimming with it. I felt almost no drag, whereas with the sort of wider rectangular shape of the full-size GoPro, you definitely can feel it pulling back on you a little bit.
Interesting. Now, what about other features like the sound quality or the battery life?
Battery life is surprisingly excellent, actually. And it's because it's got this sort of one button on-off system. So you just hit it. Let's see if I can do it right now. Hopefully I've got enough. Yep. So it takes about 4 seconds and then it starts recording. But that's from powered off all the way. Then you hit it again and it stops recording. Whereas with the other GoPros, you have to have it on in sort of a standby mode. And then you just hit start and stop. So despite the fact that it has a smaller battery, it actually gets better battery life. I found it almost doubled the battery life I was getting with the Hero 4 Silver. Audio quality is pretty good. It's not as good as the Silver is when it's outside of its case, but within the waterproof housing that the Silver needs for stuff like surfing and snorkeling, I'd say the Session outperforms it a little bit. It's close. They did a pretty good job with the mics. They also made it this sort of unique self-draining mechanism, so it doesn't get clogged with water and just sort of pool up in there. It drains out very nicely.
Oh, nice. So did they announce any accessories for this thing?
Yeah, there are a handful of accessories. Obviously, there are the frame mounts, stuff like that. There's a I don't seem to have it in front of me, but there's a little floaty thing that's made of the same foam rubber that Crocs are made out of. And then they just have a bunch of other mounts that are coming soon, with including one that sort of looks like a Iron Man's gauntlet, sort of for hands-free. They're calling it the strap, and you can strap it to your arm, your wrist, your foot, your leg. There's also one called the Jam, I believe, which is sort of marketed toward musicians. It's kind of a delicate way to mount your GoPro to your instrument. That, again, is for any of your GoPros. The Session does use most of the same standard mounts. It's just got a different case. So that's actually nice if you have a ton of mounts already for your GoPro ecosystem. At least you're already bought in.
All right, so how much does this cost again, and when can we buy it?
So it costs $400, which again is the same as the Silver, and it's going to be available July 12th. So you got a little over a week.
All right, well, Brent Rose goes surfing and gets paid for it. You can find him at brentrose.com and also on Twitter at Brent Rose. Thanks for joining us today, Brent.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. An Italian company called Hacking Team, which sells surveillance and hacking software to law enforcement organizations around the world, including the U.S. DEA, itself has been hacked and its unsavory secrets exposed. The hackers also used the company's hacked Twitter account to tweet links to Hacker Team's internal files, source code, company email, and more. Tony Bradley is the editor-in-chief of TechSpective and wrote about the hack for Forbes. Welcome to you, Tony.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Good to see you again. Now, what are some of the more compromising Hacking Team company secrets that leaked in this hack?
Well, I think that the main thing is that Reporters Without Borders has already, you know, kind of called out Hacking Team in the past, and Hacking Team has been accused of working with oppressive governments.
Saudi Arabia and a bunch of others.
Yeah, then they've specifically denied working with Sudan and some other governments like that. And this hack and the data that was leaked seems to show very clearly that they do work with a number of countries. I mean, the list is, you know, long. Egypt, Nigeria, Sudan, Honduras, Mexico, and the United States, as you mentioned. You know, and in and of itself, you know, that's, it's not illegal. It's just, you know, it just goes against what they've claimed.
Now, what sort of tools do they sell? I think they sell, for example, software that helps you sort of monitor phone calls, that sort of thing.
Correct. It's, I mean, it's, their product's called DaVinci. It allows them to monitor internet communications, phone calls. It can break encryption. You know, so basically it's a kind of a one-stop shopping platform that would allow, you know, a government to monitor subversive elements or, you know, dissidents and keep track of you know, what they're doing and who they're talking to. And, you know, as I had mentioned in the Forbes piece, you know, to an extent, I think a lot of companies are probably working with various governments, and whether or not that government is on the good guy side or the bad guy side is open to interpretation, and it depends on, you know, which company and which government you're talking to.
Now, who might have done this? Has anyone taken responsibility?
I have not heard of anyone taking someone responsibility yet. I mean, it's a good question. I mean, it's a, you know, it seems like the sort of hacktivist approach that Anonymous is famous for. I don't want to like assign it to Anonymous, but it seems like that sort of a hacktivism of a group that has the skills and resources to hack into a security vendor, which is admirable in and of itself, but that obviously took issue with the claims that Hacking Team was making and wanted to, you know, publicly disgrace them for those claims.
So, you know, all these security companies, whether they are, you know, in the business of writing reports and offering software or consulting or whatever, they're in this weird business because they, on the one hand, have to be trustworthy. They have to be trusted. They have to develop a reputation of being a highly trustworthy and above board operation. And on the other hand, in order to have the skills necessary to do what they do, they have to hire hackers, oftentimes hackers who have been convicted of breaches and so on. And at the same time, companies like this offer surveillance software. And of course, some of the best customers are in countries that are repressing their population. So I think that there's it's a weird dynamic, and they've been sort of called out. This is obviously damaging to their reputation. Do you think that Hacking Team is unique, or do you think other so-called reputable security companies are working with disreputable governments and doing disreputable things?
I don't think Hacking Team is unique by any stretch. I think that there are a lot of security vendors who, at the very least, are working with government. It might be our own government, but it, you know, working with government. And I think that there are a number of other companies out there like Hacking Team who, you know, I mean, they're a business and they're there to make a profit, and a customer is a customer. If a, you know, if a government comes to you and says, hey, we want to buy 1,000 licenses of your software, you know, depending on your company ethics, maybe you don't ask questions.
Assuming nobody will find out.
Right. You know, assuming nobody will find out. But, you know, I do think that there are other companies that would be that are probably very nervous right now that, you know, if a similar hack were to occur. I mean, in the Forbes piece, I also talked about Sony, that there's this whole sort of, you know, when the Sony hack occurred and all of that data leaked, and it was this sort of like tabloid-esque, you know, we're all watching to see what the, you know, what the juicy kind of salacious information in their emails was, as if Sony was unique. But if I think you could pack just about any company of, you know, of significant size and put their emails, dump their emails out onto the public internet and find some stuff that the company, you know, that the executives that were sending those emails didn't want other people to see. So I don't think it's unique. And I'm by no means trying to defend Hacking Team or say that they're, you know, above board. I'm just saying that I don't think they're alone in doing this. And so, you know, while we're all having a bit of fun kind of watching their, you know, public downfall, I think we need to keep in mind that there are other companies who are probably in that same boat.
I'm sure you're probably right. Now, Tony, can you tell us a little bit about Techspective? What is this website all about, and how long has it been around, that sort of thing?
Well, Techspective is my own site. It's just a general technology news site. In the past, I've written for a variety of other sources. I, as you pointed out, I still do contribute to Forbes, and I still contribute to a couple other sources as well. But I launched Techspective to be my own, general tech news site, and so we do a lot of security news. We do product reviews and other stuff, and it's going well. It's been around for, actually, we're just coming up on our 1 year anniversary.
Well, preemptive happy anniversary. Tony Bradley is at techspective.net, and you can find him on Twitter at GetTechSpective. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tony.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Amazon released, but hasn't announced, an iOS app for its cloud drive, which competes with Dropbox. The company released an Android version in late June, and that one wasn't announced either. The apps let you upload and share files from your phone or tablet. The feature set is pretty minimal. But again, if you use Amazon Cloud Drive, it's great to have the mobile apps. It is weird, I think, that they didn't announce either of these apps. It's, you know, usually companies like Amazon want to hype their new apps, you know, all the way, but they haven't said a word. They just pushed them out there quietly. Very weird. We've got a couple of big numbers for you. The first is 1080 by 1080. That's the resolution Instagram is moving to instead of its current and incredibly antiquated 640 by 640 resolution. Note that Instagram hasn't announced anything either, just like Amazon, and is still displaying pictures in the old resolution. But in recent days, they started storing pictures in the high resolution, so you can be sure that at some point very soon, they're going to roll out the new resolution. Another big number for you, $255 million. That's how many dollars HTC reported in losses in the second quarter. The loss comes after several consecutive profitable quarters, and the losses are attributable to low demand for the HTC One M9, just as the previous profits were attributable to the high demand for the HTC M1. Well, in news, you can lose a new website called Silicon Valley Dictionary. Gives you the definitions for the insane words and crazy phrases tossed around in the technology industry. You can find it at svdictionary.com. And, you know, some of my favorite words in there, I guess one of them would be gluttony gramming. That's when programmers work at a slower pace so they can get in on the free dinner that they're going to serve at the company. Another word they have is negging. This is from the HBO series Silicon Valley. Negging is to undermine the confidence of somebody to gain advantage in a situation. So what happened on Silicon Valley is that they went around looking for funding and everybody was rejecting them. So they went in all negative. They went in negging and they got lots of offers for funding. Very weird. Okay, one more crazy word from this thing. Decacorn. That's a startup that's valued at $10 billion or more. Of course, a unicorn is $1 billion or more. Decacorn is $10 billion or more. Yeah. Awesome. There's right now about 200 words, but I imagine this is going to grow as they crowdsource additional words. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Simon Rassily, who posted this picture on Twitter. He says he usually works out while watching Tech News Today so he can work out his brain as well. Shows how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. You can subscribe to Tech News Today via RSS, always a favorite method, or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. If you're ever near Petaluma, California, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. You can send email to tickets@twit.tv before you come in. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and you can follow me on all the social networks at elgin.com. Don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. The show is directed and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.